everyone, and welcome to Clocking In. My name's Lathan MB, and on this episode, we have an artist, humanitarian, and performer. It's John Hurley, aka Bella Berserk. Hi, John, how are you doing?
Lathan, how are you, sir? How are you? It's been a long time.
So well, it's been so long, hasn't it?
What a roller coaster ride it's been. It really has.
I know.
It's been an enjoyable one, but it's been good.
And that's what it's all about. We've got to enjoy life while we can.
Yeah, absolutely. I think making the most of the good times, because life's hard enough. So, yeah.
Absolutely. So let's just go right back, John. And for those people that don't know who you are or who I am, for example, just let them know exactly what it is you do.
Okay. Oh, well, it's been a bit of a multifaceted life, really, Lathan, to be honest. I mean, I started out many years ago. I mean, the older you get, obviously, the further back you look and the less you can remember. But really. But I think that from an early age, I cannot even explain this to people, but I'll try and elaborate as much as I possibly can.
Yeah.
And I think that from an early age, I wanted to be on a stage. I don't know why, I can't explain why, because nobody else in my family are remotely, they forgive me for saying this, but they're not remotely artistic or performance or, you know, actors or anything. So I don't come from a background of it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what it is. I really don't know what it is. It's just that I knew from an very early age that I wanted to be on a stage somewhere doing something. Didn't know what at the time, but I wanted to do something.
And how old were you when you sort of like started thinking about performing?
Well, I'm going to go back to some of our viewers. There was a series on the TV called Fame.
And there was a film. I love it.
You remember Fame? Everybody loved Fame. And Fame, I'm going to live forever. And all, and I loved Irene Cara. And I loved it. And I remember having my chopper bike. God, people can remember a chopper. And I remember having my little Walkman on. So I am showing my age. I had my little Walkman, and I remember listening to that song over and over and over. And all I wanted to do, Lathan, at that age, and I'm going back to my early teens now, is I wanted to go to a performance arts school.
Right.
But I didn't come from a family that would have shared that vision. Mm-hmm. So everything I ever did was almost seen as, I hope he grows out of it. I hope it's a phase he's going through. But I remember there was an iconic scene in the movie of Fame where at the end, they all sort of like pour out of the school onto the streets of New York. Mm-hmm. And they're dancing and they're jumping on cars and the freedom, the liberation, and they're just people on the street, and everybody was infused with this myriad of different arts that all came together, and music just bringing everybody together. And even now as I speak to you, that sends goosebumps over me, so I've never lost it. And I wanted to go to a school like that where I could learn to play instruments, learn to sing and dance and do all of these things. Mm-hmm. But my family, they didn't share the vision. And obviously, money was an issue, and it would have cost money to send me to anywhere like that. But that's my earliest memory of wanting to be a performer, I think.
Do you know, that's so strange that you've said that, because that was my earliest memory. I remember lying down in front of the telly like this, watching it, and I said to myself, that is what I want to do, you know? And
I could see you as Leroy. I could see you as Leroy. Remember Leroy? I could see you as Leroy in the stage musical of that, actually.
Oh, that'd be amazing to do. So talking of performances, let's take a look at one of your live performances now. This is your Dolly Parton number, 9 till 5. Oh, wow. Let me just remind the viewers that if you're listening to this, you won't be able to see the visual. But if you're watching it visually, you will be able to see the live performance from Bella, which is coming up right now. Okay, John, that was you as Dolly Parton doing 9 till 5. Where was that performance and was it long ago?
Oh, that wasn't that. Actually, that performance wasn't that long ago. And I've been doing that whole routine for over 25 years now. But wow. I think that was in a social club, actually. Oh, it was in not a social club, like a hall somewhere, where we had put on the show, and I do like a myriad of different characters. But I think that for me, I never saw what I did as, I wanted to be just a drag queen. Never wanted to.
Okay.
Don't even, to be fair.
Mm-hmm. So what other characters do you do? You do Dolly Parton, you do, come on, spill the beans. We want to know all the gossip.
I mean, I've only been doing it for nearly 30 years, and when I'm putting this spot, Madonna, Tina Turner, Sister Act, Dolly Parton, Britney Spears, Adele. Oh my word! There's so many.
There's an array of things.
Lionel, Judy Garland.
Marilyn Monroe. The list is endless. Is there anything that you don't do? You do the washing up.
That's another show. Amy Winehouse. Oh my God, I do so many of them. Everything I do. I mean, let me first say to the viewers.
Yeah, sure.
That even though they're fun and they're comedy,
right?
All of the characters that I do, I've been really heavily influenced by, not just because it's sending them up and doing comedy versions of them. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that I love the characters. I love Tina Turner. Who doesn't love Tina Turner? What an icon.
Absolutely.
Marilyn Monroe, Elvis, what an icon. You know, but I do on some of them, I do comedy takes on things that might be exaggerated about them. You know what I mean? Like Dolly's boobs and stuff like that. So you'd exaggerate those things about them just for light-hearted humour. But nothing's ever done sick. I don't do sick stuff, whereas I would use really below-the-belt stuff to really get cheap laughs. So I'd never do that.
Yeah, and for the people that are listening or watching, what would you say is the difference between a drag queen and a female impersonator?
Well, I would say a female impersonator. See, Danny LaRue never liked to be called a drag queen.
Uh-huh.
I think that because I don't know whether it's because it sounds quite a down market to be drag,
mm-hmm.
but and then we've got this influence from America now with RuPaul, and they call that a drag show, and a lot of drag queens in the States don't have an act. They come on and do a number in a show with other drag queens, but they don't have a show. But whereas in the UK, we have a show. I mean, I do a full 2 hours performance on my own out there.
Uh-huh.
But in regards to your question, a female impersonator would be someone that impersonates the embodiment of femininity as a woman. And now that could be still comedy, but a drag queen, I think, is someone who really can do very clown-like drag, or there's so many different different versions of drag on the spectrum. I prefer to be, see, my title of my show is Bella Berserk, Queen of Visual Comedy. I never use the term drag, because if people have gone to see a really bad drag act before, and let's face it, there are some out there.
So many,
just going out there to do sick stuff or whatever. If they've seen a really bad drag queen, then they'll just put you into that box that you're a drag queen. So you do, all you do on stage is swear and tell dirty jokes and do really sort of like crass things.
Yeah.
Whereas my show don't have an element of that, but it's not based on that. It's a fun show. So I prefer to call myself a speciality act.
Yeah.
You know, because not all of the characters I do in my show are female.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to be careful, because some people, like I say, perceive a drag queen as something that's to be afraid of. And I never use my voice or my act as a weapon to intimidate people.
Mm-hmm.
I would much rather people fall in love with me, Layton. You know, I would, because it's nice to be loved, isn't it?
Of course, it's lovely
to be loved. So I prefer to not intimidate. Shake them up. Do you know what? Somebody asked me the other day. They said to me, "How do you perceive what you do?" And I said, "I describe my act as a snow globe. Shake people up a little bit and watch the magic happen."
Yeah.
Get them out of their cell. You know, expose them to something they wouldn't ordinarily think about coming to see.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing I'm going to say to you is, when I first started out, I don't see myself as, I don't look at my life through a gay prism. I'm a human being, and my sexuality shouldn't be anybody's business. And even though I talk freely about who I am, I'm comfortable with who I am. Mm-hmm. But my show is for everyone, not just for gay people or black people, or white people, or, you know, it's for everyone to come and see it. It's the union of bringing everybody together through laughter and music and fun.
Of course, and it's also about them enjoying themselves and seeing something a little bit different and going with the flow, laughing with you, and all those elements of going to see a performance.
Mm. Yes, yeah, I believe that. Yeah,
and also you got married recently.
Oh God, yeah.
Let's just touch base on that a little bit. I want to know, how was the wedding? Was it all glitz and glamour? And
oh Lord, I'm the sort of person. Somebody said to me a long time ago, I don't know the ultimate key to success, but I know that the key is trying to please everybody, because you'll never please everybody. But what I tried to do that with our wedding. Now, I'm not going to elaborate too much, but last year, a lot of things happened, some really good things, but there was a lot of transition and a lot of changes. We had a few personal things going on as well, and I was starting to put together this Elvis show, which we'll talk about later on.
Of course.
But all of that was just happening. And also, I was trying to arrange the wedding. Now, we got married here in Essex, a lovely little church down the road, and all our friends, the local friends that could get it, could come to it. But then I married in Vegas. I'd always wanted to get married in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And so we had a wedding here, and then we went to Vegas, and that was glitzy and glamorous.
Oh, I mean, fabulous.
We had a black, white and bling style wedding, themed wedding, which was lovely. So nobody had an excuse as to, I've got nothing to wear, because everybody's got something black or white and bling. So, you know, and if they haven't, go down to Peacocks. So we had our suits tailor-made for us, with our names inside. It was all lovely.
Yeah.
I never do this once. And John and I, like I say, I mean, we've been together now for 26 years.
Wow.
And this is the other thing I wanted to speak to you about, because when it all became the powers that be, if you like, told us that we could have a civil partnership.
Yeah.
We didn't accept that because I've always seen myself as no worse or better than anybody else. I'm a human being that goes through this life. I breathe the same air as everybody else, you know, and I've never seen why just because the government now say we can do it. So when they told us we could have a civil partnership, it was almost like we were still not being accepted as equal. That we could do it.
I totally get that.
Because we'd made enough noise about it, so I'll give them what they want. But then when it came legal for us to be married just like everybody else, we then thought, well, we got sick of people coming up to us and saying to us, it was very patronising, Latham, to be honest, because people were coming up to us and going, oh, are you two getting married? You can now, can't you? You lot can get married now, can't you? And so we didn't. We thought, we're all right as we are. We've been together for a long time. Being married, having a piece of paper is not going to make any difference to our life. We're still going to hate each other. No, we don't. We love each other dearly.
Of course, yeah.
We're like, oh, the bird flies sometimes, I'm telling you. But we love each other and we communicate, even if it's through an argument. So, no, we do. We love each other. And I think the key for longevity in any relationship, whether it's marriage, friends, whatever, is pulling in the same direction, having respect for each other's wishes and just pulling in the same direction. And I think that we've been relatively successful in doing that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, COVID came along late, didn't it? Oh my God.
Don't even go there.
Well, just before COVID, we were arranging our wedding and then COVID happened. Then we put our wedding off, I think, about 4 times.
Wow.
And in the end, you know, when you think, is somebody trying to tell us something? We shouldn't really even. Well, anyway, when it was lifted, we got married because it was we could and we wanted to and the time was right. And it was lovely. And we had 2 weddings.
Oh, wow. That was amazing. I wish I could have been there. I was abroad.
Well, our anniversary is coming up. Oh. So on the 27th of May, we're going to have a party. So I hope you can make it.
Absolutely. We all like a good boogie.
Absolutely. Fabulous. Yeah. Bottle of Kylie.
talking about Las Vegas, let's take another look at one of your performances. Now, I just want to remind everybody that's watching, you can actually see the visuals, but if you're just listening, you will just hear the music. Because I know
this is the only movie of Bella before.
So, John, that was the performance of Elvis, and you sing in that performance also. Just let us know where you got the idea for this. Where did it come from? Just let us know a little bit.
The reason I suppose not Elvis. And I love the embodiment of his work and love being part of the magic that he created. But what he has done for me, I think, is people see John Hurley on stage as Elvis impersonated, but they don't just see Elvis, they see me performing. And it's a great way of people getting to know the real me behind makeup and behind that, and see me as a man. Because as I've got older, I've become more comfortable with the skin that I'm in. Whereas a few years ago, I don't think that outside of drag, I thought much of myself. Whereas now, I'm happy to be who I am and to put on a jumpsuit and still be John Hurley and being part of Elvis's magic. It's sort of like it's gelling together nicely for me. I'm happy with the person I am now.
That's good to hear.
And it's taken me a long time to get here, but I think that I'm more or less complete.
Fabulous.
Again, nothing in my life has ever been planned. As a drag queen, it was never planned. It just happened. It was something that sort of come along, and it was an opportunity. I grabbed it, and it happened. The funny thing was, the whole Elvis thing happened purely by accident, because I've always loved the music. Then we had the film, and the film sort of stirred something in a lot of younger people, mm-hmm. because they were reinstated with the iconic person that Elvis Presley was or is. And what happened was, I think my image sort of changed, and I think I'm going to tell you something now. I don't know whether we're going to have loads of time to talk about this, but I've always, my life has always been very music led. And in the 80s, fashion was very music led. Mm-hmm. You knew what music people were into in the 80s by the clothes that they wore. You knew somebody was a Duran Durani, or you had the New Romantics movement, David Bowie, who I absolutely still love. I love mm-hmm. David Bowie to bits. And Boy George was influenced by Bowie. So music was led by with fashion and all the rest of it. And this might surprise some people, but do you know what? I'm going to tell you something that's actually come to me. Wow. When we were working at the arena, when we were working at Atlantis, do you remember Regent's Road? We used to walk down there, and they had shops all down
there.
That's
right, yes, yeah.
I picked up this. Oh, this is wild, because I didn't think about this until now.
Right.
I picked up a CD of Morrissey's greatest hits.
And I remember playing
that. Suede Head, I love the song. I remember playing it in our hotel room at the Lincoln. Do you remember we were staying at the Lincoln? And I liked the hair. I liked, you know, they sort of like this, the high hair and the quiff and all the rest of it. And I just start styling my hair like that. But nobody ever said to me, "Oh, you look like Morrissey." They would just say to me, "You look like Elvis." Elvis. Yeah. And I Elvis all the time. Because I run an art class now, one of my ladies that are in my morning group, she said to me, "Oh," she said, "we're booking you as Elvis." And I went, "Oh, yeah, okay." And I think, what have I just let myself in for? Because even though I know some of the songs, even though I like Elvis, oh my God, what am I going to do? I ain't even got a costume. What am I going to do? So I said, yes. Anyway, it came into, as I said, last year was a really busy year for us. We had a lot of hours last year, and I was putting together a jumpsuit, learning the songs. I had a lot of other things going on as well. And I thought, I'm going to have to put this into compartments because my life is getting too busy. So anyway, it came along, I think it was July time, and it came to the date. And I said to this lady, a lovely lady, and I've got a lot to thank for her, actually, because it was her that gave me the push to do Elvis. And she said to me, "Oh, are you still doing it?" And I said, to be honest with you, Margaret, I'm not going to do it. Mm-hmm. And she said, "Why?" I said, "Because I don't want to do it half-baked. Yeah. I would rather do a proper performance for you." And I said, "And at the moment, I've got too much going on." So what I did for the ladies at the Conservative Club, I went along and I did the Bella, which they loved. They loved anyway. So they forgave me for it. But I continued doing it. And then I did a couple of Elvis performances after that. And do you know the weird thing? It really does stir something in people.
Wow.
It really does. Well, I started doing some Elvis numbers when I demasked at the end of my Bella show.
Yeah.
And going wild, absolutely wild. And so it's evolved. So I'm doing that as as another string to my bow.
Yeah, now, and also I think, you know, Elvis, everybody knows Elvis, whether they be 90 years old or whether they be 10 years old. Everybody seems to know who or what Elvis did, whether it be from a film or his music.
Crazy thing. I was in IKEA about a month ago. And we were, do you know where you go down those little aisle things? You got the numbers to go and pick up your flat pack furniture. and this woman came along and she had a child in a trolley. And this child was about 3 years old. I'm kidding you. This child was about 3 years old. And she went, Mummy, Elvis is still alive.
Oh,
how did a child of that age know A, who Elvis was, and B, that he died. So she's obviously being exposed to his music, and the lady apologized to me. She said, "Oh, I'm so sorry." I said, "Don't apologize. This is a liberating thing for me that a child knows who he is, because music today, I don't think, says a lot to me about my life. I don't know whether it's thing, Lathan. You ask a 16-year-old, they'd say, oh, it's only because I'm old. You know, or older. But I think that music had a lot to say when we were younger, and nostalgia. I mean, he's timeless. Elvis is timeless.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, with us having the internet now and being exposed to, you know, the internet, the phones, the Wi-Fi, they're lucky because they can enjoy the music that we knew when we were younger, because they can access it so easily.
Absolutely. Everything's so accessible now. Mm. So it's frightening, actually, because I remember if I had to source a costume, say, for example, I'd have to find a dressmaker, I'd have to find people. Now you can just tap it in and find someone who makes these things.
It's so easy. It's so easy. You need a feather. You just pop it into your search engine. I need to buy some plumes, some feathers. And before you know it, they're on your doorstep. So if you're enjoying this episode with John, don't forget to like, comment and share it with your besties. So, John, let's just let everybody know where we know each other from.
Well, actually, where we know each other actually from, if you think about it, we were in the Slinky Minky show.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
We were in the Slinky Minky show. That's right. God. A lifetime ago, though.
It feels like a lifetime ago.
You were a male dancer. I was working as a drag, as one of the drag queens in the show. And then when that all ended, of course, I got a contract come up to put together a show at a place called the Atlantis Arena in Great Yarmouth.
That's right.
And we had a choreographer that, quite frankly, I don't like to badmouth people on any channel or anything, but she wasn't pulling her weight.
Yeah.
And so I sacked her and brought you in.
Oh, the things we could write, like you said earlier, we could write a book.
I just remember one night you came in for rehearsals and all the plates were on the stage. Do you remember that? They hadn't even cleared all the plates off the stage. I mean, that's just minute compared to what...
We had some real good fun there, didn't we?
We did. Yeah.
But like you
said,
some
of the girls still talk to me, actually. Some of the dancers still talk to me. Not very often, but they do touch base from time to time.
That's good to hear. That feels like a lifetime ago, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'm just laughing to myself at some of the scenarios. We'll keep that for another podcast, I think.
Okay, that's absolutely fine.
Okay, so not only do you perform, John, you sing. You're a humanitarian.
Yes.
Just give a little
information. How do you... Well, okay. I would say a humanitarian is somebody that is conscious of the well-being of people less fortunate than yourself, and being sensitive to people that don't have the, are not exposed to that I've been graced with. Mm-hmm. And so even though I'm not going to harp on, because I haven't had a charmed life, I've had to really hustle and really work for everything that I have, but I can appreciate what it's like to struggle. And I can appreciate that people go through their life never achieving the things that I've done. Mm-hmm. And so I try to give them a helping hand where I can. You know, I do a lot of things for charities and helping people. Just basically people less fortunate than me. So,
yeah, which leads us on to your artwork. I've known for years anyway, with knowing you, that you're a fantastic artist. Now, I know, is it you auction some of those off to raise money? Is that correct? Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, well, I was, because of the show over the last 20 odd years has been a big, massive part of my life. It's taken over my life because I've not really had time to do much else. But when COVID came along, I found myself at a loose end. And so I started, you know, painting and drawing again. And as you said, with social media, which makes everything easier,
of course,
to expose your work. And I just started painting and drawing, just doing pictures. And people were saying to me, wow, I didn't know that you drew. I didn't know you painted. And I thought, well, it's something I've done from an early age. One of my biggest influences, I would say, my earliest and biggest influence is Walt Disney. I absolutely love Walt Disney, and so animation and all the rest of it. And so that was my exposure to being an artist. It's something I've been naturally gifted with being able to do, even though I went to art college. But during that time of being at a loose end, Lathan, I just started painting and drawing. And I thought, even though, now this is weird, because I was out of work, like so many of us were, we found ourselves suddenly, all of my work fell off the edge of a cliff. I was sitting here. Now, I've worked solidly for 26 years, and then suddenly, it was a little bit of a crisis for me, not financially, because I've put things in place to, I mean, nobody saw that coming, did they?
No, not at all.
Pandemic coming. But then I started doing paintings of wildlife, endangered wildlife. Okay. And thinking, you know, the one thing a few years ago, now I don't even know how long I've been a vegetarian. I'm not a vegan, but I'm a vegetarian. And one of the things for me is being sensitive to life doesn't have a voice.
Yeah.
You know, when you think of an animal, I don't push my beliefs on anybody else, but an animal has lungs, it has a heart, a brain, eyes, it has all the things, it has all the feelings that we have. It can taste things, it eats, it drinks, it sleeps. But the one thing an animal doesn't have is a voice.
Yeah.
And so the cruelty to animals is, and I think it's embarrassing as us as human beings that we have so much beauty in this world. Mm-hmm. We have lovely animals that share this world with us, that have the more right in some ways to have their natural environment than we have to knock down trees and take away their habitats. And I wanted to do my bit to raise some money for the WWF, which I've raised money for quite a few years. Although I've raised money for cancers and heart disease and all the rest of it. And I raised quite a bit of money. I'm quite proud, actually, because I put them on eBay.
Right.
First, and they raised quite a bit of money. And then we did something for Captain Tom, because that man, what an inspiration that man was. I did a painting of him, and I raised quite a bit of money for the for his foundation as well.
Yeah.
Just through my art. I mean, I was doing nothing else, was I? Now, you could argue, well, I would have needed the money myself, really, but all the shops were closed at one point. I couldn't go down and go clothes shopping, which is an addiction I have.
Oh, wow. It is. not like me wearing the same old rags.
They're not rags. But yeah, I mean, and I raised money because I, like I say, I mean, there I was licking my wounds, feeling sensitive and feeling sorry for myself being out of work. But I knew that I have a house, I have a partner, I have a lovely home, I have a nice life, and there are people. I mean, you think about now, I'm not going to get too deep about this. Think about people in the Ukraine, and you think about people in Gaza. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We can't even imagine. We cannot even begin to get the concept that their families have been taken away and wiped out in the blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm.
And what a Christmas they had. I hear people moaning about what a Christmas they've had. And I just want to pull people to one side and go, have a word with yourself. Because it doesn't matter how hard things are, you know, look, have you put on the news lately, you know, and watch these things that are going on, you know, in the world. Yeah, I mean, if I can make one small change while I'm on this earth, one small change to people, even if it's just that 2 hours on that stage, people and laughing and having a good time, then I've made a difference, Lathan.
I think that's so important because, you know, there's so much negativity out there as well. And especially with social media, you know, there's always somebody there to try and bring you down, isn't there? I mean, I know from some of my posts on different channels that, you know, I have had so much negativity, and I just think it's a 15 second post. What is there to be negative about? Why have you got the need to get like a keyboard warrior and put something nasty and negative? I don't see the point in it, you know.
People have got too much time. They've got too much time, that's what it is. And I think that they're jealous as well. I mean, for example, 5 years ago, my life changed because I decided I had to lose weight. I was heavier than I am now, and I lost nearly 4 stone in weight, which I've managed to keep off. Well, my lifestyle has changed. My whole way of thinking, my whole way of thinking about food has changed. But I'm not getting into that whole concept about being a warrior for Slimming World or anything like that. But when I put pictures of myself on social media, all I had was people saying that I'd had surgery, I'd had liposuction, I'd had a facelift, I'd had implants, I'd had this done. I was injecting myself with things, and it ruined me because I found myself, it was consuming my day. And I was justifying myself online, going, no, I haven't done this. No, I haven't done that. Yeah. And I've had fillers and I've had this done. I'm not opposing to people that have surgery, but I hadn't had it done. And if I had it done, I would tell the world I'd had it done.
Yeah.
Even if it was just a boast, I've got the money to do it.
Do you know?
And it was annoying me that, and the more that I said I hadn't had it done, the more people were calling me a liar, and it was awful, really.
I completely get it, you know, because people always say to me, "You've had Botox, you've had lip fillers, you've had this, you've had that," and you know, I did a post weeks and months ago now. There was a picture of me as a child, which obviously I'm a lot browner and my hair's frizzy because I'm mixed race. And then next to it was a picture of as I am now. And they were saying, oh, he's done a Michael Jackson. He's had skin whitener. Yeah, he's had skin whitener. He's straightened his hair. He's done this, he's done that. And it's like, I haven't had anything. A bit of bronzer, that's enough for me, darling.
But what about all these people that go and lay on a beach to be browner than they are? Do you know what I mean? Nobody says anything about people trying to be darker.
Yeah.
I mean, I love tan skin. I mean, I'm not allowed to lay in the sun. I'm not allowed to do it because I had skin cancer when I was younger.
Uh-huh.
And so my doctors told me never lay. If I go abroad or anything, you don't see pictures of me laying on a... I mean, I love the sun,
yeah,
but it, you know, but I can't do it. So I might go down to, I don't know, Superdrug and buy tan because I like to be tanned. But I, you know, but that's about it. But who cares, really? Yeah. Nobody cares.
And like you said, people are always willing to bring somebody down. Now, my point of that is, you know, why are you putting people down? And, you know, you never know what mental state they're in.
Mm.
You know, yeah. you hear of so many suicides from people that have been online or influencers, whatever you want to call them, and they've had so much hate comments and bullying, and they've ended up taking their own life, which is so, it's terrible. It's terrible. People need.
You know what? I'm pretty thick skinned, really,
yeah, me
when
too.
It comes to anything like that. I mean, we've been exposed to everything, haven't we? I mean, for bullying, being gay or whatever. We've learned to build up an armor to a lot of it. Yeah. But there are people that haven't. And there are people that if they don't feel good about themselves to begin with, then all of this is going to add insecurities. And this is why people become body dysmorphic. And, you know, because they don't like themselves. Because, like, for example, going back to Michael Jackson,
yeah.
he was told from an early age, his dad telling him he was ugly. He had spots. He had acne. And then he had the vitiligo to deal with. Do you know what I mean? And you imagine, we can't even begin to imagine what it would be like to have all these things going on and being in the media, in the public eye, and having that, being under that microscope all the time.
Yeah.
We can't begin to imagine, can we?
No. It's awful. People can be just so spiteful. I don't understand, you know, why people can't be happy for somebody, you know, and just turn around.
People
and
are not happy because they're not happy. Yeah, they're not happy within themselves.
Yeah.
They're not happy within themselves. Mm. It's like I know someone that whenever we go out anywhere, she will home in on somebody and say, oh, look at her over there. Look at how has she come out dressed like that. And I'll say, well, how does that alter your life? How is that changing? Oh, well, somebody should be telling her that she looks terrible. I said, but if you go over and talk like that's going to ruin her night.
Absolutely.
You know, it's going to make no odds to you what she looks like. You're going to be forgetting about her tomorrow, you know. But that's how people are.
I know, and I just don't understand how that, like you said, they're obviously not happy with their own life, and that's why they've got to ridicule somebody else for whatever reasons. And I think that's why in this day and age that people have got so many complexes. You know what I mean? Oh, I've got spots, I'm too fat, I'm too thin.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. And then they read all these magazines with that are all been airbrushed and touched up, and that the person doesn't actually look like that.
Yeah.
Because they're looking for role models, they're looking for people. I mean, going back to what we were talking about earlier, about role models, that I love them warts and all, you know?
Yeah.
For example, Elvis Presley wasn't perfect, but he showed that he wasn't perfect. He was he had a fun on stage. If he fluffed his words up, he would laugh them off. He showed himself as a natural human being, and that's one of the reasons why I love Elvis as well, because he was a fun guy. I'd love to have been able to meet someone like that, to be honest. And David Bowie as well.
Well, this is it. I mean, because back in the day, there were no filters, was they, to make you look more glam, and there was none all of this software to edit videos and your makeup and stuff. And I think, you know, I think that's where, I mean, I'm guilty of it as well, you know, sometimes on my social media accounts, you'll put a filter on to have a beard. I can barely grow a beard in real life, so the filter, I just say, makes it look a little bit different, a bit more interesting.
But that's fun, though. That's a bit of fun. You're not trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes.
Yeah.
Anyway, you're just doing that because it's fun. I mean, you can you've got filters that can change your hairstyle, and it's nice to see how a new hairstyle would look.
Yeah.
If you had it. That kind of thing, you know.
What I do when I want a new hairstyle, I just pop into my closet and take a new one out and pop it on. So that's cleared up all the rumours, everybody. Yes, it's a wig.
I love about someone like Dolly Parton as well. She tells everybody she wears wigs. somebody said to her once, "Who does your hair?" She said, "I don't know. I'm never there."
John, we have so much to talk about and we've only just tipped the iceberg, but we're going to have to go to some questions from my Instagram broadcast channel, if that's okay.
Yeah, fine. That's what I'm here for.
Okay. This one is from Sam and she say, I believe it's a he. He says, what's your favourite makeup look and how long does it take?
Whoa, I've had so many. Good. Mm. I do a standard makeup, which is the sort of like the smoky eyes and, you know, the broad makeup. And that covers a lot of the characters that I do because I can't change my makeup throughout my show.
Yeah.
So I do a makeup that covers everything. And my favourite makeup is those strong eyes, because when you're under lights, strong lights, you have to have a strong look.
Absolutely.
So that everything's exaggerated as well. So I might go outside the lip line to, you know, the same way as someone like Bianca Del Rio would have these big eyes and, you know, this striking makeups. I would say that would be my, I mean, occasionally, and the funny thing is, I always think of you when I put glitter on. I do. Because you used to basically bath in it, didn't you?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I need glitter on sometimes. Yeah, if I'm feeling in the mood, I'll put a bit of glitter and stuff like that, really. So, but that strong look that everybody knows Bella for.
Yeah, okay. We have one from Isaac now, and he's saying, what were your career goals during your childhood? But we have touched on that a little bit.
Right, well, it depends on where you're going with childhood, because I think when I was very, very young, I wanted to always think about artist. I thought I want to be an artist, but I've got to do something that's going to make me money. And now, okay, you could say I was very young, but I thought, what do you know when they say to you, oh, what do you want to do when you grow up?
Yeah.
Well, we all have these dreams, don't we, of what we're going to do. And your life changes and your aspirations change as you get older. But I wanted to be an ice skater, believe it or not. I loved figure skating. Yeah. So I wanted to be an ice skater. And then that changed in from when I found myself as an artist. I wanted to be a fashion designer. So in a way, the whole drag thing brought makeup, wig styling, wig making, character fashion, because I do make some of my clothes as well. It brought all that into one big melting pot. So, yeah.
Good. Okay, this one is from Marley. What's your favourite food or dessert?
Oh, favourite food. Oh, I love spicy foods.
Oh, me too.
I love curries. If I go anywhere, it's going to be always something like that. I love falafel. I love exotic food. I love Italian food. Oh. Anything really, but I would say spicy. If I had to choose something to make something appear now on this table, it would be something like a nice vegetable curry with rice, pillow rice.
Nice. Like and what would you follow that with? What dessert, if any?
I've actually tried to stay away from desserts because all those hidden sugars are the thing that made me the thing I was before I am, as you see me now. But if I was to be given a dessert, love ice cream. Mm-hmm. Love ice cream. Also love cheesecake.
Oh, my love favourite.
American style cakes.
I had an American cheesecake the other day. It was delicious. Okay, on to the next. This one's from Andy. He's actually put, what type of humanitarian work do you do? But you've obviously covered that anyway. Let's have a look. This is from Isaac. Have you ever seen a ghost?
Yes, I have.
Wow.
Yes, I
have. Tell me
more. Oh, the first, you know what, I'm going to try and be as brief as about this, because I've seen a few. So I was living at my grandparents', which was basically I grew up with my grandparents. I just spend weekends and holiday times at my grandparents', and she had a hall. Right, okay. For anyone that watches EastEnders, do you know the way the houses are in EastEnders? You've got the street door, you've got the stairs right in front, and then you've got a passageway that sort of goes up and down to the kitchen, haven't you? Right. So that's the only way I can try and make people visualize this. Well, my name down where the hallway was, there was a larder door and a cellar door, because in the old days, that's where they used to tip the coal down, and it used to be down in the cellar. But anyway, my granddad always used to say to me, "Don't go down there." He used to try and scare me that the bogeyman was down there. I think it was so that I wouldn't hurt myself, Dan. And you've got to remember, I was quite young. Well, I remember one day I managed to switch the light on, and it was very damp smelling down there. Whenever I talk about this, I can still visualize it very, very clearly. And I said to my nan, I said, it was a shock, really. I said, "Nanny, there's a lady down the bottom of the stairs, and she's laying face down, and there's blood." I said, "Somebody's got to help her." And you're talking about a lad of about 5 years old. Well, she said, "Don't be daft, don't be silly." I said, "No, the lady, she's wearing black, she's laying face down at the bottom of the stairs." And I said, "And she's got blood. Somebody's got." And I couldn't get it out of my mind. Well, anyway, a few years later, my nan told me that her parents used to live with them, and her mum, in her later years, had Alzheimer's, and she got up in the night thinking she was going to the toilet, and she went to the cellar door, opened it, and fell down the stairs, and she died down there. Now I never knew that, and that was the first time. Another time was I saw a guy on a station, and I went to ask him the time. Because I thought I'd missed the last train home, and he jumped off the platform, ran across the lines, and just disappeared. And I went, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa!" And that really spooked me. That really did spook me, because I was totally on my own that night. Nobody.
Okay, the next question very quickly. This is from Scarlett. What's your favorite song to Yasifi to? No, I'm not quite sure what that means. I think it means to boogie along to.
Got so many songs. Oh, somebody asked me the other night, what's my favorite song? I could say what my favorite song of Elvis is, it'd be If I Could Dream. I could say what my favorite song of ABBA is, and it would be The Day Before You Came. I could say what my favorite song of the Pet Shop Boys is, and it would be New York.
New York.
Remember we did a, yeah, do you remember that?
I
New
do.
York City. Do you remember
I do.
cheerleaders and stuff? But I think, oh God, do you know what? There's so many songs that I love. I love it's what I'm listening to at the moment. So I'm very into London Grammar at the moment. If I'm chilling out, I'll listen to London Grammar. Or there's a song by Neil Young called Harvest Moon, which I love. I don't have a favorite song. I have Enough Us Now by Starship. Is John Mayer's favorite song. That was we did our wedding dance to that. I love anything that liberates my soul. I love anything that makes me feel free. I love The State of Independence by Donna Summer.
A classic.
And while we're on the subject, What's Going On by Marvin Gaye.
Oh, I forgot about all these. Well, you don't forget about them. You put them to the back of your mind until you hear them, don't you? And he's like, "Oh, I really like that one." Okay, and the final question. This is from lots of people, actually. When's your next performance?
This weekend I've got off, which I'm absolutely brilliant. Next week I'm in Wales, and then I'm in the Midlands. I'm actually up your way, actually, but it's a private party. Then I'm and then I'm doing a little Indian restaurant. Well, I say little Indian, it's quite a big Indian restaurant place in Basildon on the 10th. So yeah, without the list in front of me, I don't know where I am. Plus, last hope I am tomorrow. But yeah.
All right, and just before we go, just remind everybody of where they can get hold of you, your socials, what social medias you're on, you know, that where you'll be doing your next performance, for people that want to go along and see you actually live.
Okay, well, I've got my Elvis show, which is my Viva Elvis show, which I've got a few of them coming up, and they can find all of them on my John Hurley Bella Berserk Facebook. Okay. I did have a website, which I should really, I'm in the process of getting a new one, because I had a Bella Berserk website, but I let the domain run out and somebody bought it up, and now it's got Chinese watches on it. So don't go on bellaberserk.com because it's nothing to do with me anymore. I am going to have a new website now, which is going to be John Hurley, because my life has changed so much, Lathan, that just as call me Bella Berserk is one thing, but I'm John Hurley that has these, all these different things that spin off from me as an artist, as a female impersonator, a speciality act, as an Elvis, as an artist, as all these things. So yeah, I've got lots and lots of things going on.
Yeah, well, what I'll do, I will include all your links in the description below. And okay. I think we need to call it a day for a minute anyway, but who knows, there could be a part two. So I know you have, your time is very precious. I want to thank you so much for this, John, and I hope to see you very soon.
Oh, Lathan, it's been absolutely lovely speaking to you. It really has. And it's been lovely to catch up with an old friend.
Of course.
It's been a pleasure, because it's opened doors of my past as well that I closed or I had a jar for a long time. Yeah. So it's been a pleasure to have helped you out with this. And I hope that your listeners and viewers can get something from it.
I'm sure they will. Thanks, John. Bye.
See you later. Bye-bye.